Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to Chatterbox Video Game Radio, folks. My name is Alon.
And my name is Aro. What's going on, Alon?
Nothing, man. How are you doing tonight?
I don't know, man. It's 10:05, 5 after 10, and we're ready to roll.
That's true, and chatterboxgameshow.com. That's where you can find information about our show. Certainly, if you want to join in on the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-536-1100. Now, we're all excited because we had a fantastic weekend, Ara and I.
It was a very exciting weekend indeed.
It was. You see, I celebrated my birthday. Even though my birthday's not even till tomorrow.
And how old are you going to be? You're going to be 21?
I'll be 39.
Wow.
Yes, yeah, still feeling young.
I was going to guess 21.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to be 39, but that's all right. Thank you, Andrew. We have plenty to talk about today. Last week we left off pretty much not talking about anything that we had intended to, aside from the one very important subject of Crackdown.
That's right.
And its importance to the industry, in my opinion. And we're all going to be let down tomorrow when we find out it's not as cool as I think it is. But we'll wait until I actually play it to find out. Right now, I still have these very high expectations. So there's
That's actually, I think, would be an interesting talk about.
What? How my expectations leave me nothing but the possibility of disappointment?
Well, you know, first impressions versus, you know, how you actually feel after, I don't know, say 5-10 hours of play.
All right, I'm not one to go overboard in general. Like, anytime you read a preview in a magazine, it's always glowing. Previews are, this is going to be the greatest game ever. It's going to change things. It's going to make everybody
else... Well, that's the status quo with press, right? But, you know, what I'm talking about is, you know, everyone knows that one guy, that one friend you have who's a gamer and...
And gets excited about everything?
And they'll get... Well, not only that, but they'll get this game and... They'll get really excited about it, and they'll get everyone pumped up about it, and then, like, everyone's playing it for a little bit, and then you realize, you know, this game was really fun and really exciting and incredible for the first 20 minutes, but now, you know, it's not so much. It's, you know, it's kind of mediocre.
Well, I think these days that happens a lot because people look at games in a magazine, and they look at movies, and like on the internet and stuff, and it always looks great, and then you play it, and you realize the gameplay sucks. Like, Far Cry on the PC actually was really good,
right?
And I would have been excited about it for the Xbox 360, and I tried the demo recently, and the demo, like, in theory, you think about the game, has a lot of potential. Ton of different weapons, huge maps, different play styles, your predator attacks, in addition, or like your instinct attacks, I don't know what they call them in the game, but your animal attack things, plus you get weapons. It's relatively good level design, in my opinion, from just the one demo level that I played. And I'm talking about Far Cry Instinct's Predator. So it's like the third version of the game.
Okay. I haven't played any of these.
It doesn't matter.
Just
anyway,
so you know.
On the PC, it looked really, really good.
Right.
But that was a couple years ago, so I don't know how it compares now. But my point is, looks good, and then you play it, and you realize that the control is actually really, really bad. And as I've said time and time again, if control is bad, the game is crap.
Right. And this has been happening almost ever since games came out. You know, I remember, you know, when I was a kid, you know, Sword of Sodan, you know, oh yeah, the characters are, you know, almost bigger than the screen, and that's really exciting. And no, it's not. It's terrible.
Yeah.
And I remember my friend once got this Budokan game. I don't know if you remember that. I think it was an EA published title.
I don't think I remember Budokan.
And it was just terrible, right? But, you know, I think part of it is kind of the tendency, especially that kids have, if they spend their hard-earned money on their games, you know, that since, you know, okay, well, you can only buy so many games within a time frame, so you tend to kind of, you know, oh, I spent so much money, I invested all this money in the game, you know, it's not so good, but I'm going to pretend like it's the best game ever made.
Well, yeah, I mean, you and I talk about this all the time, how the value of something increases with its difficulty to achieve, right? And so you need to increase the value of your own product because you had to save for months and months and months to buy this one game when you're 12. Right,
right. And
so
I just,
it better damn well be good.
I've always found that to be really fascinating because I find myself falling for it too, you know? Excite Truck, which I've raved about before, right?
Yes, and everyone else was like, what?
Right. I'll confess something to you here, Alon.
Confess.
I haven't played it since, but one thing that I didn't say when I was doing my unending rave about it a couple of shows ago was that I have this sinking feeling that even though I was just completely overjoyed and just in a state of bliss for the half hour that I played it, I did have this sinking feeling that, you know what, if I keep doing this for a few hours, yeah, I'm going to get real tired of it.
I bet that's true. But luckily, you managed to hype up all of our listeners and increase the sales of the game. So
yes, and
lucky
I should,
you for screwing our listeners.
And hey, well, I should be getting my royalty check soon for that, so I'm very happy. Yeah.
Well, speaking of our listeners, I actually wanted to mention something. While we were at the Horse and Hound,
yes,
on Saturday night, someone approached, and like he was coming towards us like you know, a lost dog.
And he came up right up to me. And
yeah, well, you didn't
like,
notice that I gave him the old, like, hey, what's up eyes. Like, oh,
yeah.
Hey, dude, like, trying to be nice and gentle.
Yeah.
I don't know who he is.
That's right.
Right. We weren't wearing signs.
There's a lot of, you know, interesting characters at
yeah,
these bars.
Yeah, we had
bars.
A really big full table. There was a big big turnout.
That's
of,
right.
Of people we knew. And so this guy walks up. I guess he talks to you. And then somehow I realize after a minute.
Well, he's like, hey, Ara, what's going on? I'm like, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, oh, should I? I'm thinking in my head, do I know this guy? You know, he seems pretty nice, so I'm just gonna pretend like I know you exactly. And I didn't know who he was. It turned out he was a listener of ours.
A listener.
And that was absolutely fantastic. I was overjoyed.
We had mentioned it last week, and that we were gonna be there. Right now, we often say that really we have no listeners in Arizona, and everybody listens over the podcast. But I know that there's got to be like probably two or three people who listen. In like local right. area.
And maybe even one or two whom we don't actually know personally.
But very few. But I figure there's got to be like 2, 3, 4. And so we had a huge turnout. That's like 25-30% of all of our listeners locally showed up.
Right. And
at this event.
And this guy doesn't know it, but he's now the ambassador of our show.
Oh, yeah. No, he earned it. He's got a crown and everything at home. It's in the mail. But anyway, I want to thank Mike for coming out from wherever the hell he lives, somewhere
yes,
in Gilbert or something.
That was very awesome to visit us, Mike. Thank you.
I promised him that I would tell his friend Nate to F off for not showing up. So F Nate and go Mike.
Right on.
Anyway, if we ever do something like that again, we'll certainly let you know. Feel free to come on out and scare us by pretending you know us and making us fearful for our lives. Anyway, we have some more things to talk about this week. You.
That's right. I've had these topics sitting on my desk. Firmly ensconced on my desk for months almost, it seems like.
It's time for you to steal the show.
So I'm going to whip them out right now. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, we had this listener write in.
We only got a couple minutes, so we got to summarize, and then we'll get to it after the break.
All right. So I want to talk about, we talked about this before. I want to talk a little more about HUD in games. And HUD, as we mentioned before, is, you know, all the user interface elements that show up.
Heads-up display for those not in the know.
Right, which actually, you know, this is one of those weird terms that, you know, people, it doesn't really mean HUD, but people just like to use it. So, you know, just out of, like, frequent misuse, it's been associated with, you know, interface stuff on the screen. And we're talking about life bars, you know, laps on the screen, how much time you have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all these things.
Wait, so heads-up display, is that normally supposed to be like the stuff you see in your visor when you're wearing a special helmet?
Well, right. I mean, originally the term was developed for things like F-16 fighters, you know, when they had new technology where you could actually see things like your gauges right in front of you, kind of overlaid in front of your normal view. So you would have to, normally you'd have to look down to see, you know, all your instruments, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, with new technology back then, something like F-16, you know, they put this little, you know, plate in front of you that's transparent, and they could show you all kinds of data on it. And so you could keep your head up while looking at, you know, your altitude and all that stuff, and that's why they call it heads-up display.
Which is, I think, most similar in gaming, at least, to Metroid Prime, if you remember playing that.
There you go. That's, you know.
That pretends to be a real heads-up display.
Something like that.
But it's in your helmet.
Yeah, and let's see, later on, I want to talk about Ridge Racer 7, which I'm very, very eager to talk about. I've got a little rant prepared for that.
Now, there's also a couple things we should cover, not big intellectual topics, but, well, actually, maybe. There's this whole EB Games GameStop thing that happened this past week.
Oh, that's right.
Got a lot of press. We're gonna end this segment. We're going to play a clip for you so you can get a feel for it in case you hadn't actually heard it yourself. I guess this conglomerate, the large EB GameStop, which used to be two rival companies keeping each other in check. You know, then GameStop went and bought everybody. Now they call themselves GameStop EB. I don't know. Maybe it's just GameStop, right? But they haven't rebranded all the EB game stores. So they act as one unit now. And they're sending out unsolicited phone calls to all the people that reserved games in the past. And in this case, it's Zelda for the Wii. And we'll play that clip. And we also got to talk about other corporate bunglings, which is the Sony PS3's, Sony's Jack Tretton. I thought we had like 4 minutes left.
4 minutes, seconds,
3 minutes ago, you're like, we got 4 minutes. All right, good. Is my computer hot here? Can I play this sound? Here we go.
Hi, this is Eris from GameStop and EB Games calling you with an important message. We apologize for interrupting your day, but we have a great offer to tell you about regarding your purchase. Our records indicate you reserved Legend of Zelda. If you have finished playing this game, we would like to offer you a special trade-in price of $35 if you trade in Legend of Zelda by Wednesday, February 21st. This offer ends soon, so stop by your local store today. We appreciate your business. Thank you. Goodbye. End of message. To delete this message, press 7.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Ara.
And I'm Alon, telling you to go to UAT.edu. Fantastic University of Electric. Is that the University of Electric?
Advancing.
No, it's the University of Advancing Technology.
Technology.
Over there in the Tempe, Arizona, UAT.edu. I went there. I went there myself. We have several friends, actually, who were there Saturday night.
Is that so?
Yeah.
That's
there was,
very exciting.
There was Sean. He's a programmer, a developer. Right. Not in the games industry, but he's using his skills, making more money than all of my game industry friends. And
well, everyone knows if you want to make money, don't go to the game industry, especially if you're a programmer.
No, it's like the entertainment industry. If you're an actor, you're probably not making money, but a few of them do. A few of them make a lot of money.
Most of them make
scratch.
But it's not you, and it's not me.
Then my friend Matt, you met him. He's the one who works right upstairs from you.
Yes.
Upstairs. Anyway.
All right, so let's go back to this recording that you played for us. I mean, what did they do? Let's, like, find the most annoying voice possible and ask her to be as annoying as possible?
No. The voice I had no problem with. And this is a GameStop mentality which became possible with the EB point-of-sale system.
We understand that you bought Princess whatever for an exorbitant price, we want to buy it back for you to screw you over.
They're offering like $35,
right,
which is more than they do for any other trade game. The only time you get $35 for a game is when it's a recent game, it's really popular, and it's a special price. Normally, they don't call you about that stuff. And maybe for some people, it's actually a benefit. I bet if we had people listening live, more people listening live versus podcast, we would get some callers saying, I actually like that they let me know that it's got a $35 value. Although, I didn't hear that on the message. I only heard that. I read that.
Right. No, they did say it on the message. And, you know, I would also like to be informed of such things. But the tone of it, I mean, it's so condescending. And, oh, we're really friendly. And we want to take all your money.
It's interesting that they started off with, we're sorry to bother you. It's like, if you recognize that you're bothering me,
right,
perhaps you shouldn't do that. And what I was saying about the point of sale system is that EB always had a good, like, graphical, well-data-based system, right? It was far more up-to-date and capable of expanding than the GameStop one. And when GameStop took over EB, they took the point-of-sale system, and now they can do all these fun things, like not lose your pre-order, for one. That's a valuable thing. But the calling the people bit, automatic recordings and stuff, that didn't used to happen years and years ago, but the last couple of years they've been doing that, I think.
Right.
At least the last 1 year, for sure. And I just don't know how I feel about this. That we've got our lives filled with solicitors and stuff, so maybe our good store is calling us. We shouldn't be upset about.
Right. I mean, I don't like anybody calling me unsolicited, But you know, I don't mind so much that they're just leaving a message. Unfortunately, it's not a real person.
It wouldn't necessarily be leaving a message if you picked up the phone.
Right.
Then you just hear this voice. Although it was on a cell phone too.
Right. I mean, you know, if they had a real person call in, then you could kind of toy with them a little bit and play some games with them, and that would be fun. So they're kind of depriving.
Is that validated for you if
it's
a real person?
Well, it would have, but they're depriving me of this. So, you know, that's one step down, you know, but
I don't know. It's gotten a lot of attention on the web because a lot of people feel like not necessarily upset that it happened once, but upset with where it might go.
Right.
Because what you didn't see was this was actually like a YouTube style video where they were able to put on their text and their opinions while we listened to the recording. And they were putting on there like, they bug you when you're in the store. I should play it again for myself so I could see it. But one thing they pointed out was like when you buy a game, they get you to pre-order other stuff.
Yes.
By scaring you into saying, oh, you want people to get it when it comes out.
That's the thing that I hate most about this is the whole attitude of it's just, you know, intimidating the customer, trying to coax the customer into, you know, doing all these things that they don't really have to do.
Yeah, it's terrorism. We talked about that on another show, that they terrorize you into pre-ordering a game. And
I wouldn't go that far, but it's definitely intimidation.
Well, I mean, that's what it is. It's fear. It's instilling fear.
Yes.
That I won't be able to get this.
Yes.
And so I very intentionally do not pre-order just to buck the system. And the one time I did pre-order most recently, and I've mentioned this before, was for Beat Mania for the PS2, because I figured not a lot of people know about that game. It's going to come with hardware. They're not going to make any of them. And now, I mean, that game was even easy to get on day one. In fact, they couldn't find my pre-order at the store. I had to buy it somewhere else because they couldn't find it. And I actually bought it for less money elsewhere
without
a pre-order.
Ain't that a kick in the face?
Yeah, exactly. So never pre-ordering again, even for the big games. Because you know what? The big games, they realized, buy enough of them so you can have them for people. The only thing you have to sit and pre-order for is consoles because it's too hard to make the hardware. But that was the thing. Like, they watched it evolve before pre-ordering existed, before used games existed in the stores. It was no big deal. And then they started it up. And I remember I started working for EB Games the first time around, right after they started selling used games. And they were realizing how valuable it is for their business model. And it quickly became the most important part.
So they make all the profits?
Yeah. It quickly became the most important part of their business. And so they ramped up, you know, how much they bug you for used games and telling you to bring them in. Every time you answer the friggin' phone, or they answer the phone, they remind you that you can buy, sell, and trade video games and whatever. Like, so fast you can't even understand what they're saying.
Are they still pushing the cleaners?
No. That was a Funko special.
That was, woo! Don't even get me started on that.
Anyway, so now the pre-orders, they realize, are a huge part of their business, too. I have a feeling part of it is because they pre-order games and then people don't buy them, and it's like a gift card that goes unspent. So anyway, they bug people so much with the pre-orders, it's actually really annoying because I know they're going to do it and I know I don't want it. And they use the fear tactics and the demeaning tactics. And this isn't everybody. Like, I worked there and I wasn't an ass about it.
Right. But a reputation has definitely developed.
Yeah, because you go to the store and you've got your buddies, your super geek buddies you can talk game stuff with. And a lot of people have realized, many of them, you read about on places like the blogs that we read, that a lot of the people there talk right out of their ass, don't know what they're talking about. And that's annoying.
If you're a salesperson of any kind, that's the MO, so.
No, but like, these guys.
You mean just like the video game junkies that just like hang around and loiter?
Yeah,
just to be cool, you know?
They're video game junkies. They get a job because they realize they need a job, but then they start just making stuff up. And it's really funny because I've seen it happen a million times. And then you add on the corporate, wait, you're going to lose your job if you don't push this stuff. And they don't know how to sell because they're not salesmen. But they push you for pre-orders, and they start doing this fear crap where you're not going to get the game.
Right.
And I hate it. And so now my point is that we started receiving phone calls, corporate style, too. Not from your buddy Joe, the game geek, who you have a strange rapport with even though he doesn't know how to talk to people. You're talking to Christina or Rachel or whomever is on the phone playing a recording for you, and you know you're going to start getting them every week.
Yeah, speaking of intimidation, today, actually, I've tried to cancel my Xbox Live account for the second time now. And
the second time in 1 month or the second time in 2 months?
No, the second time ever. You know, I had I had an account a while back playing PGR3. Then I got tired of it because it was Demolition Derby. And I canceled my account back then. And you know, recently I got it for poker, and I'm getting a little tired of the poker. I haven't played it in a month, so I'm going to cancel it again.
Not once have you called me up and said, hey, let's play poker.
Yeah, well, I've been preoccupied, of course.
Okay.
Anyway, what they do, first of all, the most annoying thing is that you can't readily... I hate that music. Just when I'm about to make a good point, it comes.
All right, let it out. We got 30 seconds.
All right, well, every time you call up, first of all, you have to call. You can't just cancel. They don't give you an interface to cancel.
1-800-4-MY-XBOX.
Which is thoroughly annoying.
Yeah.
Right? And then the people on the other line, when you cancel, they try to talk you out of it. They're like, is there anyone else that likes to play games? Do you want to play with me? I could, you know, like, what time are you up? You know, I'll try to be online.
All right, I want to hear more about that after the break. Now we will go. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name's Alon.
And I'm Ara the S-Bomb Shirinian.
Have you ever said the S-Bomb? I say the S-Bomb.
Yes.
And then, I don't know if it sounds as good when you say it.
Well, you know, I didn't make it up, so it can't sound as good.
You're right. We got to get a sound effect for that. Andrew, of course, running the show behind the glass there. We appreciate Andrew doing that for us. Now, you were talking about trying to cancel Xbox Live.
Yeah.
They give you the old, are you sure you want to quit? Are you sure?
Since I've done this twice, I know now that the customer service operators are not only instructed to ask you, well, why are you canceling? Well, I don't know. I'm kind of stupid and I like saving money. They also have to ask you, you know, is there somebody else that you can transfer the account to? And I guess the first time I did it, the guy was like, yeah, do you want to play with me online? Because I told him, I said, well, you know, I don't have any other people to play online against. Every time I'm online, I have to wait, I don't know what, 10 minutes before I can get a game started. I'll play online with you. No, I don't want to play online with you. I don't even believe you. Why are you telling me this?
It's Rent-A-Friend.
You're probably working at the time I'm trying to be.
It's literally Rent-A-Friend because, oh, well, you know, I can be your friend on Xbox. I wonder if as part of the job, they have to play for half an hour before they start their shift.
I don't know. That would be really funny. But it's such a pain in the butt to cancel this thing.
I can understand that.
And if you have a monthly account, at least, they can't, they won't prorate the amount that you've used up so far.
No. And that would be silly, because it's just a month and it's just like $8.
And hey man, it's my money. And they won't refund you either if you hadn't played at all. So anytime you call during the month, you have to kind of preempt this, because they'll just say, oh, okay, now we're going to change your account status to won't renew automatically after this month.
Yes.
This is just so scam-like. It's so annoying.
Yeah, I don't know. Buying a month at a time, you shouldn't get too picky over the few days. But it's like if you bought the card at the store for the 3 months or something.
Right.
They're not going to prorate you and send you back a refund for the thing you purchased.
Right. Hey, I want my money, all right?
I understand.
That's what I'm all about, man.
I think you ought to buy the year subscription, not be such a cheap ass, and then actually get online and play with me.
And
since I've never played poker or any other online game.
Okay. Well, maybe we can try that.
Oh. Good. So you'll have to start a third name.
I did.
You won't be able to get your name back. You know that.
What do you... No, I keep my name. This is just going from silver to gold, silver to gold.
Oh, because you go to silver, you can keep your name
right
now.
Right.
Oh, I can't even tell you the discussion I had with the people trying to get my name back when I wanted my original... My original Xbox Live name.
This was on the old Xbox Live service, I presume.
Well, before they were as advanced as they are now. Still can't get it back. So right. I still have the credit card. Anyway,
right.
Let's move on.
Let's talk about this UI stuff.
Heads-up display.
Yes, heads-up displays, interface elements on the screen. One of our listeners called. He didn't call, actually. He sent us an email.
Email us, chatterboxgameshow.com. You can link to our emails right from the page.
We love emails.
Or MySpace, by the way. MySpace/ChatterboxGameShow.
Yes, we love collecting friends whom we'll never see and never meet.
Hey, listen, he came to the bar this week.
Except for that guy. He was awesome.
Okay.
He doesn't count. Okay. So, now, you've heard me rant in the past about, well, having user interface elements on the screen that are, you know, some games like The Getaway try to integrate them into the action. And you've heard me rant about this and how stupid this is. Because in The Getaway, for example, I mean, what do they do? Okay, you have a life bar, right? Well, what's the life bar? It's not a little interface graphic on the corner of the screen like they normally do. It's a blood stain on your character's back that magically shrinks and grows, which just totally doesn't make any sense at all.
Didn't he also limp?
Yes, and there's the limping, but I mean, like, what is this phantom blood stain? That makes no sense. So one of our listeners asked us, you know, it would be interesting to hear a conversation about, you know, ways of displaying these, you know, all this video game information in the game, in the game world, in ways that make sense. You know, Getaway is one of the worst applications of that, and he references games that do this naturally that make sense. Like, for example, in Super Mario Kart, in the battle mode, your health is represented by these balloons that are floating above your car. When you get hit, one balloon goes off. Get hit again, another balloon goes off, and
yeah,
when you're out of balloons, you're dead. He also talks about, you know, in Zelda 64, the fairy, which is a character, is actually kind of part of your user interface because the fairy is involved in, you know, the Z locking on that you do. And actually, I think in this last Zelda game, isn't your cursor basically a fairy?
Yeah, there's actually several of Zelda games. I think Tink or Tingle or whatever his name is in the GameCube one also did something like that. I don't remember enough to talk about it, but I believe he was.
So, you know, I think those are good applications of, you know, you don't have to put the interface graphics artificially on the screen for it to work. Another example I can think of is in the Spyro games. You have this dragonfly or something, and he's your life meter. And at first he's blue, and then you get hit, and then he turns green. And if you get hit enough, he'll go away. And you know that if the dragonfly is not around, one more hit and you're dead. And, you know, this is pretty cool. It, as far as I'm concerned, if the method of communication to the player is clear, I don't care how they do it. I don't think it's necessarily more involving or, what's the word that I hate so much?
Immersive?
Immersive, yes. More immersive that you're looking at a blood stain or a balloon versus an actual artificial meter. I don't think that has anything to do with that. As long as the means of communication are clear, I think it's totally fine.
But I imagine the development time on producing in-game measurement or in-game display like that, like the dragonfly, a lot more than just slapping a meter on the top of the screen and measuring your hit points.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on how you do it, right? I mean, you know, the dragonfly has to fly around a little bit, and he has his own animation and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, it's just kind of give or take, right? So the other thing that I just saw looking over your shoulders, we were browsing some web pages. One of the sites we were looking at brings up the question, well, how much user interface is too much?
Yeah, there's a lot of games that kind of overdo it.
There's a lot of games that use a lot of interface, and I don't think that a lot of interface is a lot necessarily, and I also think that you can have too little interface, and I really think it all boils down to the context. In other words, you need to have, what's really important is not whether you're showing a little bit or a lot, but that you're conveying information to the player exactly when they need to have that information. I remember one of the games, the Maximo for the PS2, had this user interface element where it would show you how many keys you had when you used the key, but not before. So, for example, if you have like 4 keys, right? If you go up to a door and unlock it, then...
Oh, you've got 3 left.
Then the graphics come on the screen and says, oh, you have 3 left, and then about 10 seconds later, they go off screen.
Can't you now press a button to bring the HUD back momentarily?
You could. I think you could pause it. But this is annoying. Really, what they should have done is they should have, as you approached a door and gotten into the vicinity of a door, then it should have told you, okay, well, you have 4 keys. Because really, I mean, you have a limited number of keys, and there is some management of, should I use a key on this door or not?
Yeah.
So you need to know how many you have before you use the thing, not after. After makes no sense.
Yeah. And so it should have been auto-triggered to show it to you.
Right.
Yeah, see, that's not bad.
So it all depends on the situation here. You know, there's not...
I think the bottom line is, like you're trying to point out, you need to have things communicated, and you have to have them communicated at the right time. And so sometimes the problem with having too much information is that there's so many meters. For instance, if you're in a racing game, right. And it's a game that's picky enough that you want to know your exact speed, right? So they've got to have the gauge, your speedometer. But then there's going to be, obviously, the stuff in your way. You've got to be watching for other cars. At the same time, they've got the map that rotates as you go around the track, right? So you want to know where you are in the map and how many people are behind you.
Right.
And at the same time, there's a rear view mirror, right? And then down there's a nitro boost meter and how much you have there. But then again, you also have to know how much time you have left to get to the end of the race before you're kicked out because you took so long or something.
Right. This is an important consideration. A lot of people don't seem to appreciate the fact that when you're displaying information to the player, right, there's only so much data a player can take in. You could even say that there's a limited bandwidth in, you know, the player game interface.
Yeah.
So if you display too much data, depending on what's happening,
you end up receiving none of it.
Right. The player will just ignore it.
And that's my point, how they've got to find another way to convey this. So I believe in Fight Night 3 for the PS3, I could be off here. Somebody should correct me if I'm wrong. But if I remember correctly, some of the comparisons between the PS3 and the 360 version are sort of like the visuals are throwing into the PS3. And so like when you get hit, things will go purple or hazy or something. I know that the one on the 360 does a lot of this stuff too. But
right.
They try to make that game, and EA does this a lot. Well, I don't know about a lot, but certainly in the Fight Night games, they try to bring you in, make it immersive. I know you love that.
Indeed.
Yeah, and so you're just the guy in the ring, right? You are that character. And so when you get hit or when something important happens, like, it'll sort of change how it's viewed. And you know, oh, you got hit really hard because it went into slow-mo and you know, blood spitting out of your mouth or whatever.
Right.
But like
I do think that's annoying, though, just when you don't show much at all. Maybe I'll say a couple words about that when we come back.
But, yeah, there's a bunch of ways to do it. You don't have to have 20 meters on the screen. We'll be right back after the break.
Maybe
talk to
more meters. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm your host, Ara.
Ara the S-Bomb.
And we have our other host.
My name's Alon, and I got to remind you of a couple things. First of all, we always like to know UAT.edu, University of Advancing Technology.
Give them all your money.
Yeah. Well,
you
listen,
can go there if you want, but more importantly,
I passed by the other day. My roommate went to buy one of those giant TVs, like 46-inch LCD, 2 feet from his face. Very nice TV.
So I was impressed.
We had to go to Fry's Electronics, right? Not too many of those in the country, but in this area, we got a couple. Across the street from Fry's is UAT. UAT is expanding. They're doubling or more, I guess. Like,
Do they have like a concourse that goes between Fry's and UAT now?
No, but they have actually considered it. So right behind where they used to have the parking lot is now, like, it's just been empty space, like bulldozed or whatever. But now they've actually got a giant structure there, and eventually it'll be an actual building where people might actually be. I don't know if they're putting equipment there or if it's going to be a dorm or what, but anyway, they're getting bigger.
Very exciting. All right. You mentioned something. Well, do you have any more?
Well, I was going to say that I might actually see some UAT people also when I go to Game Developers Conference in a couple weeks. You're going to be there yourself, right?
Oh, I'll be there.
All right, so Game Developers Conference is the
in
first,
full effect.
Yeah, first full week of March. Now, you're going to go down there with your company. You got stuff to do, sessions and things. I just go there for the good times.
Yes, and, I'm very jealous of that, actually.
I enjoy the sessions, actually. I'm sure we'll end up in more than one together. But also, they get a lot of stuff to do at night and things like that. If any listeners are going down there, let us know. You can email us or MySpace us, like I said. We've been taking some videos and some pictures in the studio tonight. We might throw some stuff on MySpace, too.
Maybe we can have, like, a GDC party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, actually, that'd be kind of cool. Not in my hotel room, though.
Okay, well, getting back to what we were talking about before the break, you mentioned Fight Night and how a lot of games like that, they don't like the on-screen UI so much. And I kind of have a problem with that. Not so much that there's no on-screen UI,
but there's no information disbursement.
The information that they give you, like, let's say something about, oh, I don't know, the health of your boxer, right?
Yeah.
If he even has a life bar, the way that they represent this is by what? There's, I don't know, your boxer is really kind of slow. There's what's going on the screen. There's like blurring or something.
I haven't played enough of it, so I don't know. I was just pulling a couple ideas out of my hat. But I was thinking more of the racing games and how I wish they could find another way to emote to me like how much time I have left in the race.
Okay. Let's get to that in a second, though. With this boxing stuff, you know, when I'm playing a game like Fight Night, I can tell when my boxer's almost dead or getting close to it. But the way that, since they don't give you something like a life bar, the granularity of the information that they're communicating to the player is very, very poor.
Yeah, in other words, you can't really tell if he's 97% full or 100% full or 20%.
Right.
You just sort of know he's almost done or he's really healthy.
Right. Now, I can see why they did it, because with the visual look of that game, it would probably look pretty weird if you had an explicit life bar. But on the other hand, this is important for the player because you actually change your strategy depending on where your level of life is in a game like that. And everybody's threshold of, you know, okay, I'm going to be more careful or less careful is different. And if you have some kind of consistent, precise way to measure this, then that lets everyone, you know where you're at in the match.
No, I agree with you.
When this kind of hazy, foggy kind of, oh, well, I'm doing pretty bad now compared to, you know, I'm doing pretty good before. It's not precise enough, and I don't like that.
One thing I don't like about boxing games is sort of how I can't tell if I'm going to be knocked out, and I can't tell if when I get knocked out, will I be able to get back up or not. Some of them just say when you get knocked out three times, you stay down, or
right.
It's a TKO, or you can get up if you weren't beat up enough. But like a game like Street Fighter, you knew that this particular move would take off 20%, and it would take off 20% every time. You could tell if they had 20% left or something, you know, approximating that amount.
Right. You know what I bet they do, actually? I bet in a game like the Fight Night games, at least the last one, I bet that they may not even have some kind of life bar per se. They might have all this crazy funny stuff going in the code that tells you whether you're going to get up or if you're slow or if you're fast or how many hits you're away from getting knocked down. And it's probably, I may even wager money that it's probably more complicated than a simple life bar. But what it comes down to is that they're simply obfuscating data from the player, and I don't think that is usually a good thing.
Yeah, that's actually sort of a common theme with some of the flashier EA games, is that they spend more time on the flash and take away from the potential gameplay.
Right, and it looks better, right?
Yeah.
It's. I mean, anybody watching, no problems there.
Yeah.
But when you're playing, and I'm getting sick of this, actually, because they're making so many accommodations that make these games more impressive to watch or better to watch or more entertaining to watch. And for the player, almost unequivocally, it's a disservice.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. I understand.
So that's where I'm at.
I've become almost apathetic about that sort of thing. Because as soon as I come to expect it, then okay. It can happen again and it doesn't faze me. But, you know, there's a lot of companies that still do a good job, so I'm happy with that. And I won't play certain games that are big just because of the flash.
Right.
But, you know, if you're going to advertise your game on TV, it better look good. So I'm sure that's part of it.
But well, I'm sure, you know, they've done video game advertisements without showing game footage before, so.
And those are bad ads. So we got a couple minutes left here. I'm wondering if you want to go start talking about Ridge Racer 7.
Yeah. Well, you know, I could give you the abbreviated version, because I know if I go all out,
we can
will
bitch
run
about
out.
Sony if you want. I mean,
yeah, let's talk about Sony.
Okay,
that Sony's so, always fun to talk about.
If we waited too much longer, it'd sort of be out of it'd be too long anyway, or too far from what happened. People might recall last week or the week before. I don't know. People were whining about Jack Tretton. I don't know what happened. Like, did he fall off the wagon or what? But he was in an interview. Was it an EGM?
I believe it was an EGM interview. He was making...
I thought maybe it was GamePro.
No, I'm pretty sure it's EGM.
Okay.
He was, what, making bets with the staff? What is this?
The interviewers, he was talking about how scant the PS3 is, how you can't really find them anywhere. Now, this interview was done in January, so it was, you know, a month ago or more than a month ago, but he was saying how hard it was to find, and he's like, you know, if you can find a PS3 in a store that's been on a shelf for more than 5 minutes, I'll give you $1,200 for it.
Cash. Whole cold, hard cash.
I don't think he actually said how he would pay for it. But he said he'd give you $1,200 for it, and I'm pretty sure he was considering U.S. dollars, not Hong Kong dollars.
Right.
And
probably.
And then they were like, but we just called like 18 stores, and they all had them. And he just, you know, he just doesn't answer. Doesn't, well, I don't know. I didn't even read the article.
What did he say? He said something else. It was like, well, it's good that they're in so many stores or something like that.
The point is that he cites, like, I only read these things second, third hand. I don't do my due diligence in reporting. I'm not trying to be a news show here. But the point is, like, he didn't actually approach or attempt to answer the question.
Oh, totally dodged it.
Yeah, totally dodged it and continued to blow smoke again.
Yeah, why would you make a bet if you're an executive giving you an interview? Why would you make a cash money bet in an interview? What is that?
It's actually like Sony has decided ahead of time, we're going to try and make the most outrageous statements we can.
Temerity! It's temerity!
Yeah. We're going to consistently say things that are dumb so that people will talk about us being dumb and, like, maybe bad press is good press. Well, they say, like,
I guess Jack Tretton's the bad boy of execs.
Any attention is good attention. I don't know. But it's just, it's another of the many, many things that Sony, PR-wise, like Sony big guys, have done that just make me disrespect them. Like, are you trying to make me think that it's hard to get? Because I know better than that.
You love them, don't you?
Because a month after it came out, people were trying to get me to buy them in their stores. They want to see $700 on their sales receipts. Anyway, it's a good thing we brought this up. We didn't have time for your Ridge stuff. We'll be back next week, everybody. Go to myspace.com/chatterboxgameshow and chatterboxgameshow.com.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.